This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
As we do every single Friday, we spend some time picking out stories from the rest of the continent, trying to see where our peers are. It could be from any aspect. It could be the economy. It could be political. And today marks the inauguration of Bola Tinubu as the Nigerian president there. And that's after he won that election in February of this year. And of course, that's after outgoing President Muhammadu Buhari served his term. And so we do have a small panel on the line to help us really unpack what this means for Nigeria's economy, as well as, you know, the Nigerian people. And so joining us to have this conversation, I am joined by Sia Biniza, Executive Director at Political Economy Southern Africa, as well as Samuel Oyankamni, who is a macroeconomic analyst at Naira Metrics, coming from Nigeria. Good evening to you both. Thank you so much for your time.
Hi, good evening, Norton.
Good evening. I'm Samuel. You there? Can you hear us? Hi, Samuel. You there?
Good evening. I can hear you. I'm very well.
Wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
Wonderful. Thank you both for your time this evening. Very keen to find out, maybe Samuel, we'll start with you. What does it mean today to have Bola Tinubu, you know, come in and have his inauguration and officially become the president of Nigeria?
Yeah, it is such a significant event for Nigeria and Nigerians to have a smooth transition, democratically elected president come into power. And then it will be interesting to see what happens going forward. Nigerians have some pros and cons, or more or less some downsides to the previous administration, and we'll be looking forward to seeing some new reforms from the new president and see how that changes the environment, the landscape, the trust that we have in government, or the distrust that Nigerians have towards government in the past. It will be interesting to see how that plays out going forward. But it is really a significant, auspicious days for many Nigerians. For many, it is still one that requires some redress in court, and to see if they can be proven otherwise. But as of right now, we have a precedent, and we want to see some of the policies that he's going to bring on board and how that's going to shape the country going forward in the next 4 years.
Now, Sia, you observe, these kinds of transitions throughout the continent. I'm wondering, from your perspective, a smooth transition for Nigeria, how has it been for the country today?
Sure. Look, I think one positive coming I just wanted to say that one of the positives coming out of this election is that, obviously, being a smooth transition in an additional civilian regime in Nigeria is a continuation of the positive steps that have been taken since the early 90s. You may remember that historically, Nigeria was predominantly run or ruled by historically military-based regimes, or people who were generals of the army or had military experience in the past. And a shift towards civilian rule has been a positive step in spreading and reinforcing democratization in Nigeria. However, you know, one of the biggest criticisms is that the former president Buhari leaves quite a, well, not a bad rule. He doesn't leave a very good legacy of his term, given obviously the continuing internal security challenges faced by the Boko Haram in the northern, northeastern parts of the country, and the fact that despite having two terms, the regime has not been able to reduce the fighting or even recover some of the girls that were kidnapped some years back, and more recently has had more challenges in terms of the economics of Nigeria, given where the oil prices have been over the last 3 to 4 years. These are some of the challenges that are now sitting on the table of Tinubu that he needs to resolve moving forward. And I think one of the most big important issues is going to be how this current regime is going to engage the young people, the youth of Nigeria, given that a large contingent of the youth feels disenfranchised and has a lot of distrust towards the government in Nigeria.
I'm actually keen for us to expand on that, you know, and possibly what exactly got President Tinubu elected. We do know that Peter Obi was, you know, the candidate who had really come in, had the youth going. Samuel, maybe you can help us here. And he obviously is not the incoming president. So I'm wondering, what did President Tinubu run with? What were some of his promises? And then, you know, on CS point, how the youth is thinking about him as he enters the hot seat.
So of course, Peter Obi came in as the preferred candidate for most of Nigerian youth, and that's just because it was at a point where Nigerians needed a change in power. They wanted a shift from the norms. So don't forget that Buhari was ruled on that the ambience of the All Progressive Congress, and then the same thing for Tinubu and the same APC. And we've seen that the power has been shifted amongst PDP and APC since the era of democracy. Nigerians wanted a change, and Peter Obi provided them with that under the Labour Party. But of course, Nigerian politics is quite a unique one, where popularity on social media does not necessarily win an election. But there are many other fundamentals which I think Tinubu utilized fully to be able to emerge as the president-elect during the period. Don't forget that he was once a senator from Lagos State and a two-time governor in Lagos State, which is believed that his antecedent as the governor of Lagos State is what Lagos is still riding on. Lagos State actually has an economy on its own that stands as a country and is the economic hub of Nigeria. Believing based on some of this achievement that he has achieved during his time as the governor, the fiscal management during his time here too, and then his background even as an accountant in the oil and gas industry in its youthful days, more or less also suggests the fact that he might be able to bring that into the fore. Don't forget that Nigeria has been battling with fiscal imbalance for the past 11 years, recording year-on-year fiscal deficits over the years, and 2023 is projected to hit about 11.1 trillion naira, which is the highest on record. And our debt, our loans, our debt is increasing year in, year out, to fact, day in, day out. And some of these things are some of the things that would also appeal to some members of the country that, oh, probably Tinubu will be able to change this dimension if he is if he can do the unpopular thing, for example, removing subsidy, manage our fiscal fiscal numbers adequately such that we do not have to incur more debt, maybe to an extent improve based on his capitalist system. It could also help spurring some level of investment in Nigerian economy. Our FDI and FPIs have dipped significantly since the COVID-19. So those are some of the fundamentals that it's believed that he's going to bring into the fore based on his experience as someone who adopts a capitalist system in Lagos, and that could probably help Nigeria going forward. So I feel some of these policies during his manifestos must have also hinged on the Nigerian populace to vote for him.
Very interesting, Samuel. You know, some of the perspective that you give us here. Yeah, maybe from your perspective, you can help us understand then some of the immediate economic, you know, challenges that President Tinubu does need to address. I think all countries on the continent at this point facing one or other economic challenge.
Yes. Look, I think one of the obvious big challenges is going to be how to develop and diversify the Nigerian economy. Nigeria has depended on oil for a very long time, couple of decades at this point. However, they've not been able to develop their domestic refining capacity. The expectation, though, given the Dangote refinery that's expected to come online this year, is that with that coming online, they should see some of their balance of payment context improve, in that, you know, Nigeria will be less reliant on importing petroleum from the rest of the world. Given that it's the top oil producer on the continent, it's actually quite a shame that the country is still dependent heavily on importing its petroleum from the rest of the world. And with that, I think, gives Nigeria then an opportunity to reallocate some of that forex towards investment, but towards other things that will help diversify the economy. So from an economic perspective, And I don't think that President Tinubu is going to be able to achieve a major shift in terms of the economy of Nigeria moving away from oil. However, with coming online of the Dangote refinery, this will allow the government of Nigeria and the economy to invest in other areas or other sectors, natural gas being one and others linked to beneficiation, in order to diversify the economy away from oil. Obviously, the oil dependency has had a significant impact, given that, you know, the domestic or global oil price has a significant impact on economic growth, but also export earnings in Nigeria. And hence, over the last 3 years, as oil prices, at least pre-COVID, were very subdued or very low, the economy was struggling to grow, and then came the pandemic, which made matters worse. But what we've seen over the last year has been a slight recovery in oil prices, which has been good for Nigeria. But obviously, that reinforces the dependence, which is what Nigeria needs to move away from in order to balance its macroeconomy and also to create local growth in terms of per capita income, because that has also been very slow. And I think these are some of the forces that have influenced the surging of things like domestic petty crime, mm-hmm. you know, petty kidnappings, etc., is that the economy has struggled over the last 5 years, and there's been very slow growth in GDP or growth per capita. And so, you know, with this opportunity now, with the coming on of the refinery and the diversification of the Nigerian economy, would improve livelihoods and incomes of most Nigerian households. At least this is what we hope. But I guess, you know, the proof will lie in the pudding, because I think a number of African countries have faced this opportunity where former business people have been elected into power with the hope that they would turn matters around. And I think a number of countries have been severely disappointed, South Africa being one of those, and Zambia in the SADC region being amongst those countries. So we'll have to see how President Tinubu executes his term, but these are some of the big major economic issues facing him currently.
Tamin, I'm wondering if you are keen to weigh in here on the issue of diversifying Nigeria's economy, and where else besides oil could the economy turn for some green shoots and from some much needed economic growth and productivity?
So when we take a look at the previous administration, we saw that he really tried to diversify the economy by investing a ton of funds in the agricultural sector. And then we saw relative growth in the agricultural sector over the years, except for the first quarter of this year, where we recorded our first contraction in about 7 years. But of course, we also want to understand that that's not quite enough, because the economy is quite wide, and then we are in a digital age. I would expect that the coming administration is going to try and expand beyond agriculture, which, of course, not taking away anything from agriculture, because Nigerians spend over 50% of their earnings on food. So food is food sustainability is actually very key. Up to date, Nigeria is still a net importer of agri products. So we definitely need to improve our local production. But then the manufacturing sector is one area that a lot of people have not really taken a very concise look at. So when you look at our GDP numbers, you see that the contribution of our industry has been shrinking over the years, it's shrinking to the likes of services and then agriculture. One of the major problems we face here in Nigeria is that we are not able to convert some of this raw produce into value that is exportable or that's consumable by the Nigerian populace. So we need to be able to attract investment in the manufacturing sector, where we convert some of this raw produce into finished goods, into more consumable items, into more various byproducts that could be export value for Nigerians, and that could also be value for the continent, Nigeria specifically here speaking. So I think it is important that the government pay attention to the manufacturing sector. And then also, we are in a digital age. I think about 3 weeks, the federal government rolled out a blockchain digital framework that Nigeria is going to adopt. I think it's going to be a very good one, because when, again, you look at the economy, the ICT sector has been growing significantly since COVID-19, and that's not far-fetched. A lot of people now consume more products online. People buy things through e-commerce. People browse on the internet. A lot of Nigerians now go watch skits and different videos on Facebook and YouTube in order to, of course, while away time. So there is a high demand for ICT products. There's a high demand for data. There's a high demand for calls. So the federal government needs to be able to attract as much investment in this area. So if you look at that sector right now, we have just four players working in the mainstream. We need to be able to ensure that there's a lot more competition in that area, such that growth will be good to see. The economy has not been growing significantly when it comes to a per capita basis. Even on a gross increase, it has not really grown more than average of 2 to 3% annually over the past 5 years. And that's not, of course, what you want to see, especially when your population is growing at a more astronomic level. So I would expect that the new administration is going to come, diversify the economy such that our manufacturing sector is working at par. Our services sector, one of which predominantly is the ICT and the banking sector, is also working at par. I think the consolidation of all these sectors will help drive significant growth in the Nigerian economy. Foreign investments will troop in because these are the money-minting areas of any economy in this era.
Now, I'd like us to spend some time speaking just about, you know, some fiscal and monetary policy and where we stand, you know, and where Nigeria stands in that regard. Maybe the first and most important aspect that we all know that President Tinubu needs to contend with is the issue of the fuel subsidy. And I think it's possibly one of the most contentious issues that he might have to manage, and as soon as possible, one that might be very polarizing very quickly for his presidency. I'm wondering from your perspective, Sia, you know, what sort of intricate balance does President Tinubu need to strike here in managing the issue of the fuel subsidy?
Sure. Okay, so looking at the fiscal in Nigeria, I would say two things are really what's driving unsustainable fiscal developments in Nigeria. One being the high cost of debt. Nigeria's total debt in relative terms is not actually very high. We're talking less than 50% debt to GDP ratio. But where they suffer the most is that a lot of this is external debt and comes at quite expensive costs. So, for example, in 2022, total public debt was sitting at 37.5% of debt to GDP. However, the debt servicing costs were around a third of government's total revenue. So what that means is that looking at how to improve the fiscal situation, the first thing that the government needs to do is to substitute its external debt with finding domestic financing. And that speaks to the need to develop the capital markets in Nigeria. The second issue is that I think on the fuel subsidy, there's very little room for them to cut or reduce matters, because obviously, given the cascading effects of fuel costs on, Nigerian livelihoods, this is also linked to a sort of social and political stability issue. And one of the key drivers of government spending over the last year has been to respond, to the security challenges caused by difficult economic environment and low incomes. And so looking forward, I don't think that the government of Nigeria is likely to cut the government subsidy. I think what they would do is probably reallocate some of the funding towards productive means. And obviously, one of the big events coming on is, as I mentioned, the coming on of the refinery, meaning a lot less fuel imports are going to be dependent on in Nigeria. So what that means is that it's an opportunity for government to then invest in productive sectors of the economy. So yeah, looking at the fuel subsidy issue, it's unlikely to be cut significantly. And also, given that it has an impact on political stability in the country, government will need to find a way to spend more on productive means in the economy in order to boost livelihoods, such that they can offset the demand on security expenditure by creating, rising incomes and giving people an opportunity to earn income and livelihoods through honest means or through the economy, as opposed to the other, the illegal ways that have been a challenge for domestic security in Nigeria. So for me, it's finding domestic funding to substitute external debt for government, and also being able to invest in productive sectors that will then increase the livelihoods for Nigerians.
Thanks for that, Sia. Samuel, would you like to weigh in on the issue of the fuel subsidy?
Yes, definitely. I think so. The issue of fuel subsidy in Nigeria is a very interesting conversation, and it could easily go south, especially the fact that price of petrol more or less affects every other thing in Nigeria. Nigeria is currently dealing with an inflation rate of about 22.22%. Mm-hmm. That is highest in about 17 years. And the expectation is that if we remove subsidy abruptly, it could definitely push Nigeria's inflation as high as 30% and could cause a lot of havoc in purchasing power of Nigerians. But however, we also understand that the fiscal numbers have to be well managed. Having to endure 5 to 6 trillion yearly on petrol subsidy that does not necessarily lead to any productivity in the economy, and yet Nigerians still have to queue at some point during the year to buy fuel in their filling stations, still have scarcity of petrol products when it gets to yield-type period. At the end of the day, it seems like the 5 to 6 trillion naira you're spending annually, it's in vain. And then there have also been reports about how that has been used as a source of corruption in the country and embezzlement. So, of course, we agree that it has to be removed. But then I would have recommended that it should be phased across a period of time. It would have been nice if, since about 2 to 3 years ago, that the conversation around fuel subsidy has been more in the news, that the federal government, as at then, would have started phasing it in such a way that this month you remove 20 naira, the next 2 months you remove another 20 naira. So it does not have such a huge impact on inflation numbers at once, because then again, we have a number of things that might happen during this new administration. If you remove subsidy, price of petrol for an average Nigerian could go as high as 600 naira. That is going to affect cost of transportation, it's going to affect cost of goods, it's going to affect cost of practically everything. And then there's also the conversation of unifying exchange rate between the parallel market and the official rate. If all this happened at the same time, first, again, we also remember that our presidents, our elected presidents in Nigeria, always want to go with popular decisions and popular policies, because you always want to contest the next time. So you don't want to make decisions that will make you unpopular, or that will make most Nigerians more or less hate you anyways. So you tend to always be skeptical about making decisions like this. While we agree that it is good for the Nigerian economy, I would have recommended a phasing a calendar such that it's not going to be all at once on the Nigerian populace. But of course, it is left to the president. We also know that from the previous administration, there was supposed to be some form of reallocation of some of this fund to cushion the effect on people by giving them some stipends. But then I don't see how that is going to significantly change anything, because if petrol price increase of up to 300% on Nigerians at a go is going to really be hard on people and the economy as a whole.
Now, before I let you both go, we don't have much time left, and maybe I could ask you to quickly help us understand from your perspective in President Tinubu's first 100 days, the things that he absolutely must address. See, I imagine that some issues are structural. They'll take much longer, to really change. But 100 days is often what presidents gauge themselves against. So, see, maybe let's start with you.
Sure. Look, for me, it's two things. One, it's youth. I think the Old People's Congress, the APC, needs to really engage Nigerian youth in a sustainable long-term way, because, as they continue to feel disenfranchised, this may create, social unrest as people take to the streets in order to feel heard. Secondly, for me, is going to be the issue of energy supply. One of the biggest constraints, and I agree with Samuel's point that, Nigeria needs to grow its manufacturing capacity. Currently, manufacturing only contributes around 7 to 8% of GDP, and any country at the relative size of Nigeria is talking about manufacturing in about 10 to 15% in terms of its contribution to GDP. However, we won't be able to realize that potential without Nigeria investing in its power generation. currently, the issue of power is a huge problem in Nigeria, and a lot of people actually rely on generators, etc. And, you know, you cannot grow in industrial production or manufacturing without providing cheap, reliable energy for industry to rely on.
Wonderful. And Samuel, would you like to weigh in President Tinubu's first 100 days?
First 100 days, I think, of course, not taking away from what has been highlighted, I think one thing he needs to address, which has been a pounding issue over the years, is insecurity. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to ensure that Nigeria is once and for all saved from the menace of Boko Haram, internal insurgents and whatnot. If we're able to achieve that, I think that is going to have a pastry effect on many of the challenges that we have in our food security, food production in the northern region. And then foreign investors will probably have some level of security, more confidence to invest in the Nigerian economy. And then having done that, I think we need also, amongst other things, to ensure that we unify Nigeria. Nigerians right now do not feel like a lot of more Nigerians, which had increased the volume of brain drain that we've recorded in the country over the past 2 years. We hear a lot of conversations around Japa. Many Nigerians are looking to leave the shores of the country. And these are our best brains, these are our best talents. You want the economy to grow, but those the labor force who are supposed to ensure the growth of the economy are moving outside. So you need to find a way to ensure that they feel encompassed in the system and they are able to invest their intellectual and their financial resources into the development of the economy. I think if you're able to do that, unify the country, ensure their security, I think we will be able to be on our way towards achieving other things across power, diversifying the economy, exchange rate problems and whatnot. But first, I would hope that we're able to do these two things in the first 100 days.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for your time and insights this evening, really taking us all the way to Nigeria this evening to understand what's happening there in the political realm as well as the economic one. Thank you both so much.
Thanks
so much. That was Sia Biniza, Executive Director at Political Economy Southern Africa, as well as Samuel Oyangamni, the Macroeconomic Analyst at Naira Metrics, coming from Nigeria, speaking to us about what President Bola Tinubu should do in his first 100 days, but also the journey ahead of him.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.